You'd think it'd be a good problem to have, but it can actually be paralyzing. You've worked hard, got out of debt, and hit a point where you're ready to start investing, really build your wealth. But now everyone's got thoughts on what you should do next. Your parents say property worked well for them. Your friends say that's yesterday's news and the share market is better. So which should you go for? And even if you do pick, how do you do it right? Well, welcome to Ask the Experts, where each week, people from inside the money world answer your questions. Making Sense has partnered up with EnableMe to get you the strategies for reaching financial freedom faster. Head to their website to learn more. Visit enable.me today. All right, we have the fabulous Katie Wesney from EnableMe here to help us figure it all out. Ready for the letter?
So ready.
Okay. Hi, Francis. I've hit the stage where I'm finally out of the trenches with my money. Debt paid off, decent income, and now I want to build something for the future. I've been listening to your podcast, but I still don't know what I want to do. My parents swear by property and have a couple of rentals themselves, but it seems so expensive. And I'm not sure it's the same bet it was when they invested. Then I look at shares, and in some ways it seems easier, in others it seems scarier. I don't know where to even start. So which one is better? And do you think one is going to do better in the future? How do I choose? And how do I start? Classic analysis paralysis.
Yeah, I love it. And she's not at the starting line. Getting rid of debt, sorting income, that is huge. It's just what comes next for her in terms of strategy.
Yeah. Well, property versus shares, you must have people ask you that all the time. Do you have a preference?
No. No, I actually don't. It's just, where do you lean in terms of age and stage and what are you trying to achieve? Super important when we look at both. I think there is a place for both. It's just, as I said, in what order?
Okay. So do you have sort of a times when one works better than the other, general rules of thumb?
Yeah, I think property works when there is quite a large wealth gap in terms of what you're trying to achieve, because you can leverage and use borrowed money to effectively have a bigger asset that's going to go up in time. And you have a longer time frame in terms of when you need to achieve something by versus shares. And when I say shares, I'm generally speaking to my clients about managed funds. Generally speaking, the great thing about shares is it gives you that layer of diversification and liquidity when you are investing via the managed fund mechanism.
Interesting there that you mention about property being good for, you know, you're borrowing money to get into it and you have a longer period of time, because that means you're necessarily looking into the future. I have seen, and we've had that conversation on this podcast as well, where people have been talking about, is the age of property over? So when you're looking into the future, how do you feel about that conversation?
Property has changed. It really has. And I think we all acknowledge that era of easy money has just finished. And I think it's less about buying anything and letting time do its thing. I think it's more about discipline, understanding what you need to achieve with that asset class, and really understanding your numbers. That's critical. It's different, but the same mechanisms that have worked well in the past can work again. You just have to be deliberate and disciplined.
So yes, still to property,
yes,
but more strategically.
Absolutely. You're not just buying anything. It's what is the right property for me and what is my hold strategy? Those two things are critical to ensure that you're able to keep it when the market might dip, because property, like shares, is quite cyclical and you just have to have the ability to hold it when things change.
It's really funny, isn't it? Because I do feel like we end up with this very black and white discussion of property, where people tend to be either amazing fans, it's great, it doubles every 10 years or whatever they say, and it's going to be such an important lever for your wealth, or it's over, you should only rent, put your money into shares, and it's, you know, properties for suckers or boomers. And I just think kind of both are wrong.
Absolutely. And the fundamentals still exist, but you have to be deliberate. And again, I think getting good advice, understanding what you are trying to achieve, that is, it's just critical in terms of any strategy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you were talking to someone who is looking at this and they are thinking maybe property, what would be the strategy now and how would you help them sort of lay out some of that groundwork?
Yeah. So you're asking yourselves really clear questions. So what am I trying to achieve from a numeric perspective and what is my timeline to achieve it? When you look at a particular property, you're understanding, well, what is the cash flow associated with that property? So if you're renting it out, what is the rent versus what it's going to cost you in terms of mortgage, rates, etc.? And you're building in contingencies. So you need to ensure that you have a buffer. And then you're trying to understand, well, what is the capital gain prospects associated with this property in terms of future growth? That is really critical in terms of buying the right property for you, and the right property for me and you could be entirely different in terms of our goals and our cash flow.
So you've really got to first of all sit down and do the hard work of asking yourself what you want.
Exactly right, like anything.
Okay, if you were talking to a client, how would you help them start that conversation with themselves as well?
First, it is understanding, do I have a long time? So I always say you buy a property and have the ability to hold it through at least a cycle, generally speaking, 10 years. So that's the time frame we're looking at. And what does that property need to do for me? So if it's an investment property, maybe we've figured out that we have a gap in terms of what we need to achieve around retirement. Maybe that's 400,000. So we need to kind of crunch the numbers to understand, being conservative based on what's happened in the past, can we project what's going to happen in the future? And will that property tick the box? And do we have the capacity from a cash flow perspective to top up potentially that property at the moment in terms of where interest rates are to have the ability to hold it? So those are the things that we're looking at.
Not so fun fact, when you take on a 30-year mortgage, you'll probably pay more than double what you originally borrowed because of the cost of interest. That's probably not the Kiwi dream you bought into. The team at EnableMe specialize in taking charge of your money and growing your wealth, including how to get rid of your mortgage faster. Book a consultation with an EnableMe financial advisor today by visiting enable.me. One of the other things that I picked up in this letter, I mean, short and sweet letter, but a sentence that really stuck out to me was, look at shares. In some ways it seems easier, in others it seems scarier.
Yeah, so true. And
I've had people say it to me a lot, that they find the share market feels particularly intimidating, particularly scary. Do you think people see that? Like, do clients come in and say, I want to, but it's scary?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think a house is tangible. You can see it versus kind of shares, managed funds, like a KiwiSaver, you know, you're looking at a number on a screen. It's kind of bouncing around a lot potentially, and that can feel like gambling. But again, not if you do it well. But I think that kind of feeds into, it's not tangible, you can't see it, so it feels harder.
Yeah. So how do you beat that sort of mental moment?
Yeah. Again, you go back to your plan and your goals. And I think often it's just starting with something as well, not making it too hard. For my clients, we're not share picking. I think that, you know, a bit of fun, certainly, but you're not going to stake your financial future on it, because that's quite high risk. If you're just looking at one company, that's that particular board of directors, it's in a particular country, industry, again, that seems risky. So when my clients look at it, generally speaking, it's that managed fund piece. They're figuring out what can they afford to invest, and then they're automating it to make it easy and removing friction. So that kind of dollar cost averaging. So you're just investing as a matter of course. And again, I think that makes it easier. And once you're doing it on a small scale, it's easier to scale up.
Just like what I say all the time, you know, I started investing with $5 a week. And some people will message me and say, what's even the point of that? The point is that I started. You know, I invest more than that now, but I don't think I'd have ever had the confidence to invest if I hadn't started small.
Yep, absolutely. And boring works, and it's making it accessible in terms of smaller chunks. And then our brain just gets used to doing it.
Yeah. And I think that rise of the DIY investing, I love that in terms of it's just made it so much more accessible for people. It's so much more of a reality for people. Do you think there's a good way to handle it in terms of give it a little flutter on your own, do it through a company, through a fund manager? Is there any tactics along that sort of scale that help make it a bit less scary?
I really do advocate for my clients. It's around that manage fund piece and you're just understanding your risk in terms of when you might need to access it. That's a really, and you're doing it already likely through KiwiSaver. That's a good reminder you're already investing. And again, that manage fund element is great. It is liquid. It's just how much risk can I afford to take? That will dictate what fund type you lean into. And again, just start. Just start with anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be perfect.
It doesn't, because you learn as well. And again, if you start micro, you can course correct as well. And you're figuring out what's comfortable to you.
Totally. You can change as you go. Exactly what you're saying. You can course correct. For some reason, we expect ourselves to start off perfect with money and keep doing it. I mean, did any of us start cooking intense 5-course meals for dinner every night? No, we probably started when we were teenagers making beans on toast. You know, let yourself do the same with your money, right?
I think you do have to counter yourself a little bit though, because you, if you are, for example, investing in a growth managed fund for the long term and the market drops, you really do need to keep telling yourself if you do not need that money now, you shouldn't crystallize a loss because the share market will dip. We know that's true. Property market will dip. It's just having the ability to hold your line because we know in time it will course correct. So again, you're trying to counter yourself more than anything else in this process.
Yeah, have plans. Don't rely on blue sky thinking of this. Obviously, we want to be doing this to make our money better. But plan for things to go wrong and have that as part of the plan from the get-go, right? And then you'll be fine.
Yeah. And in the same breath, if you're investing your funds because you want to earn a better return than the bank and you're going to buy a house in 12 months' time, be very cognizant of that in terms of the risk that you take, because that is effectively the volatility that's going to be attached to that particular investment. So again, get that right at the start and it's easier to kind of hold that line into the future to get the gain that you want.
Okay. If this client walked into your office and they say, dealing with some analysis paralysis here, my parents say this, my friends say this, I don't know, property shares, what do I do? Where would you start with them?
Yeah. So again, we just go back to cash flow, what cash in, cash out, what's left over, but understand the goals, non-negotiable if they're employed and they get a contribution from their employer, we're investing in KiwiSaver to maximize that employer contribution. We would also potentially even, and I know this is not part of the question, but it's definitely part of the equation, look at ensuring that she's adequately protected her income thereafter, because again, that helps steady the ship in terms of strategy. And if she has the capacity to leverage, I would say, well, let's buy a property, whether it's a home, if it's an investment, we figure that out in accordance to her goals and capacity, have a great strategy to pay off that mortgage. And then again, when the mortgage is down to a point, we buy another property and then we're looking to invest in shares to add that liquidity piece and manage funds.
When you look at your sort of client roster overall, do you have a way that people tend to go?
When people are younger and have capacity to borrow money and they're trying to grow wealth and close a gap, generally speaking, we more lean into property. As people get older and closer to retirement, we're trying to introduce that layer of diversification and liquidity. Because to be very clear, you do not have an infinite time to invest in property because the bank just won't lend you money as you get older and closer to retirement. That becomes more challenging. You lean where you have opportunities and ability, and that's anchored to what you're trying to achieve, generally speaking.
That's super interesting, the way you've linked that to age. It makes so much sense.
We think that we have this infinite ability to do everything and we just don't. So I think acknowledging that, that's important. And again, that capacity thing comes and goes in terms of you might be out of a job for a point in time. You might get sick. I've had beautiful clients who have invested in property and 2 years later there's a cancer diagnosis. And again, that window just shuts. And if you do it well, you've just got another asset bubbling away in the background that's going to serve you into the future.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Life happens and you got a plan for it.
It does. And again, if you do this sensibly, you're understanding how that asset might serve you, you're having a buffer, then you, it's not a drain, or it shouldn't be a drain. Where things go wrong is, I'll just buy any old thing, and over leveraging, that's where you can get hurt, because again, there's no strategy around that.
Really smart. As always, Katie Wesney, thank you so much from Enable Me, financial advisor extraordinaire. Thank you so much. Now, if you have a question that you would like us to answer, send it through. Let's dissect it for you. ask@francescook.co.nz. That's the email to send it through. Until next time, have a great day. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most situations. It's not individual financial advice. If you're after that, a financial advisor is always the best bet.